I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. Welcome everyone who is joining us for the Sunday program, and those of you online. We are on day two of a 9-day session, which is focusing on sound as a support for concentration. We called it deep listening. And I just wanted to acknowledge all the session participants here. I feel so appreciative of you all that you took such a large chunk of time out of your lives to listen deeply. This is something that is so needed in our world, and that you care about this is very moving to me. So we're in the hard part of Sishin, where despite a beautiful soundscape, there's this very loud, persistent sound. And that's the sound of me and mine. What do we do about that? Jogen brought forth yesterday a very core teaching of Buddhism. And I think we skirt around a little bit. And that is the teaching on renunciation. So I want to talk about that today. This is what the Dharma gives us as an antidote to the problem of personal territory, of which we have direct experience as we sit here in Sishin. And I feel like it's really helpful, at least for me, to bring this forward on Sishin in a clear way. So the term for renunciation in Pali, which is the language of the early Buddhist tradition, is nekama. And it comes from the Sanskrit word, which is naishkramya, which means to go forth. It makes vivid that moment in the story of Buddhism when Siddhartha Gautama left his palace and chose a homeless life. What was that about? It makes vivid the moment when you decided to register for Sishin or move to the monastery for a time. What was that about? To my ears, the word going forth has a nicer connotation than the word renunciation, which has this kind of valence of rejection, deprivation, non-participation. But going forth suggests possibilities and vistas. That a renunciant's life can be equated with the beautiful is captured in this verse from the Digha Nikaya, which is the long discourses section of the Pali Canon. It says, the household life is confined and dusty. Life gone forth is the open air. It's not easy living at home. To live the holy life in all its fullness, in all its purity, polished like a conch shell. As you may know, renunciation is one of the paramitas or perfections qualities associated with an enlightened being. And renunciants in the Indian tradition are known as shramanas, literally ones who exert effort. And the Buddha was just one of many shramanas. So when we enter Sushin, we enter the path of the shramana. What does that mean? Well, we become part of a community of folk who are interested in letting go, who are not scared to move out of their comfort zones, folks who take their actions seriously, who understand that life creates stains, has a stain. Folks who contemplate ahimsa, the possibility of living a less harmful life. And the shramanas believe in purification, that there is something jewel-like and radiant that is a quality of being a human being, and that it can be polished or simply revealed. They also understand that karma is a heavy burden, requires a lot of effort to contend with our conditioning. And I'm sure you have experienced that even over this one day. Some of this conditioning, which we may not even know. Renunciation is not a popular term in the West. We don't support the path of the shramana. It's not a value that goes very well with secular materialism. But that's what we are doing together this week. We are treading this path. And we're getting the opportunity to feel into this very core teaching of the Dharma. I was reflecting on the fact that sometimes when we come from outside the monastery, we may feel very pleased to let things go. The demand of jobs, relationships, schedules, family life, cooking dinner, walking pets. But then we arrive here and realize that we can't leave the real things that bind us behind just by a change in schedule or a change of scene. We're still clenching. We can feel that tension in our bodies as we sit, stand, walk, lie down. And it becomes obvious that it's easier to let go of things that we don't like. Harder to let go of the things that we like, such as sleep, choice, personal time. However, we must all have had a sense that there was something valuable in Siddhartha's journey from the palace, or we wouldn't be here, consenting to this training in restriction, constriction, disruption that Sushin provides. So why would you give up the fun of samsara? This is a central question of spiritual life. People have reflected on this throughout time. It's a really valuable question. I would ponder this. One of the beautiful things about the early literature of Buddhism that's recorded in the Pali Canon is its recording of these very simple and direct exchanges that the Buddha has with beings from all walks of life. And we get to hear his response to genuine questions, genuine confusions. So I wanted to read you a little bit from a sutta called the Tapusa Sutta. A householder named Tapusa asked the Buddha this very question: why would we be interested in renunciation? So Tapusa says, "We are householders who indulge in sensuality, delight in sensuality, enjoy sensuality, rejoice in sensuality. For us, renunciation seems like a sheer drop-off. Yet I've heard that in this doctrine and discipline, the hearts of the very young monks leap up at renunciation, grow confident, steadfast, and firm, seeing it as peace. So right here is where this doctrine and discipline is contrary to the great mass of people." And the Buddha replies, "So it is. Even I myself, before my awakening, when I was still an unawakened bodhisattva, thought, renunciation is good, seclusion is good, but my heart didn't leap up at renunciation. It didn't grow confident, steadfast, or firm, seeing it as peace. And the thought occurred to me, what is the cause? What is the reason why my heart doesn't leap up at renunciation? Doesn't grow confident, steadfast, or firm, seeing it as peace? Then the thought occurred to me, I haven't seen the drawback of sensual pleasures. I haven't pursued that theme. I haven't understood the reward of renunciation. I haven't familiarized myself with it. That's why my heart doesn't leap up at renunciation. Doesn't grow confident, steadfast, or firm, seeing it as peace." So the teaching here is that in order to understand the value of renunciation, we need to see both the drawbacks of sensual pleasure by pursuing that theme, really living our lives, perhaps making mistakes. From my experience, it's hard to let go of something until you see how it hurts you. And we need to familiarize ourselves with the rewards of renunciation. We're probably all quite well-versed in samsara, this cycle of death and rebirth that we circle again and again, this perpetual cycle of dukkha. We've probably all pursued the theme of the drawbacks of sensual pleasure. Maybe we've been buffeted around by the eight worldly winds. This is a way of describing the instability inherent in living a life in the framework of gain and loss, success and failure, praise and blame, pleasure and pain. And we've probably all drunk the poisons of greed, aversion, and delusion. How tasty these drinks are. So how do we develop a taste for something other than the samsaric experience that's so familiar? Perhaps it's simply that we have suffered enough. Or maybe we have seen the harm that we can cause and become interested in the possibility of living a less harmful life. Or maybe we truly have faith that there is the possibility of something smoother. Or maybe we believe that great happiness and bliss is our birthright. Maybe we're inspired by statements like this from the teacher Ajahn Chah, where the rewards of renunciation are stated so clearly. If you let go a little, you will have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you will have a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you will have complete peace. So how do we let go? I find it heartening that since the time of the Buddha, renunciation has not been the domain of only monastic practitioners. Lay practitioners have been encouraged to practice letting go through the practice of generosity, dana. This was usually expressed through providing food and requisites for the monastic community. Quite simply, when we open our hands and give, we are training in letting go. Lay people were also encouraged to formally take up the 8 precepts. And this is done still on the new moon and the full moon days. These are called observance days. I find it extremely inspiring that people all over the world do this regularly. By taking up these precepts, we vow not to just act in self-interest, but to reflect deeply on how our actions implicate others. And so when we do this, we are training in letting go. I think many of us here are familiar with the first 5 precepts taken up at these times. We consider them the basis for an ethical life, and really they are the basis of most religious traditions. We may have taken them formally ourselves, but I think this is really important to make them the forefront of our sesshin. So let's bring them forward now. Panatipata Veramini Sikkha Padam Samadhiyami. I undertake the training precept to refrain from taking the life of any living being. So let's make it vivid how we are taking life and giving life as we move together through this week. Adinna dana veramani sikkha padam samadhiyami. I undertake the training precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. In what ways are we stealing from ourselves? A brahmacharya veramani sikkha padam samadhiyami. I undertake the training precept to refrain from sexual misconduct. Many people take on the practice of celibacy for a time, or investigate the great energy of sensuality, our powerful aliveness. Musavada veramani sikkha padam samadhiyami. I undertake the training precept to refrain from false and harmful speech. What are the lies that we are repeating again and again as we sit on the cushion? Sura Miryama Japa Bhattana Veramani Sikha Padam Samadhyami. I undertake the training precept to refrain from consuming intoxicating drinks and drugs which lead to carelessness. Even without access to drink and drugs, we still intoxicate ourselves. What are the ways that you are doing that? Why? The next three precepts are the renunciant precepts. I undertake the training precept to refrain from eating at inappropriate times. In Arsa Shin, we substitute the precept, which is usually interpreted as not eating after noon, with attention to mindful eating in Oryoki. We discern what is just enough. I undertake the training precept to refrain from entertainment, beautification, and adornment. On this session, we are substituting the precept, which prohibits entertainment, to providing an opportunity to listen in a different way. We get to be present with this sense gate of hearing without this heavy overlay of thought. We get to value sound vibrations, how they affect and energize our being. We get to explore this really good question, is there silence? We can confuse training and renunciation with guidelines for ethical behavior, refraining from eating a meal in the evening or giving up entertainment or practicing celibacy are not ethical matters. The encouragement to give up these activities for a time is intended to increase the intensity and focus in our practice. And it brings forth this really interesting question, how do we dissipate life energy? In the Buddhist tradition, when we take on these eight precepts, we become what's called an anagarika for a time, which means a homeless one. It's very interesting that in the spiritual context, homelessness does not have a negative connotation. It's actually a choice that emerges from wisdom. The teachings on renunciation give us this opportunity to see how we normally live, the kinds of structures that we build to support our sense of personhood. The Buddha's insight was that there is a stickiness to our lives. We grab hold, we make things ours, we put down stakes. We are builders and constructors at heart. As Jogen mentioned yesterday, this is made vivid by the Buddha's statement upon his enlightenment, where his awakening is described as this process of dismantling, demolition, bringing the house down. And this is the quote that I found. He says, "O house builder, you're seen. You will not build a house again. All your rafters broken. the ridgepole destroyed, gone to the unformed, the mind has come to the end of craving. There is this really interesting sutta called the Sabbasava Sutta, where the Buddha talks about the problem with our normal orientation towards our experience. And the word that is explored in this text is asava, which means outflows or inflows, which emphasizes the fact that we are permeable, susceptible to being implicated, that we soak up, that we leak, that we ooze. This feels really poignant today as we observe how human beings have polluted and destroyed the planet. So the Buddhist teachings emphasize the fact that our structures leak, that we might even leave a wake in our path. We definitely cast a shadow. And because we're oozing in this way, we have a responsibility to deal with that, and for the sake of other beings and for the sake of our planet. So according to the Dharma, practicing restraint plugs the leak, allows us to see the possibility of another kind of life. In Sesshin, we have this amazing opportunity to vividly see how letting go is the very nature of things. Things arise, disappear, arise, disappear continuously. We can't hold on to anything. And in Sesshin, we have this opportunity to vividly see the benefits of renunciation, how these training rules affect our own bodies and minds, what they reveal. When we suggest that we don't move in the Zendo, we immediately come up against our deep hope for something other than life as it is. We want to interfere with our experience. We have so many itches we want to scratch. We can see the tension in our bodies. The depth of our discomfort is alarming. We may observe our breath is stuck, or we have no relationship with it at all. By suggesting that we don't talk, the chatter in our minds becomes so loud, and we get to observe the narratives that we go to again and again, our likes and dislikes. I'm sure you've noticed the centrality of yourself in every thought. By providing just enough food and just enough sleep, we get to see how we usually use things. Maybe we see our sense of entitlement or privilege. How do we use material objects? Our homes, our clothes, our food, and maybe more subtly, how do we use the time in our life? By practicing restraint, we get to see how we pick things up. This process of wanting, of grasping, of holding, of claiming, which asks us to consider this very important question: is this necessary? There's a weight that comes from carrying so much around. There's a tension It comes from clenching so hard to things. And we bravely feel this in Sesshin. The teacher Uchiyama Roshi suggests that we open the hand of thought. He says, dwelling here and now in this reality, letting go of all the accidental things that arise in our minds is what I mean by opening the hand of thought. When we open our hand, unclench, we begin to rest. There is a space of non-contention. We don't have to constantly manipulate, maneuver, control, and the body relaxes. The story goes that the Buddha tried all kinds of techniques, mastered all kinds of techniques, then finally had to let go under the Bodhi tree. And this letting go was stimulated by a childhood memory, a memory of rest and joy under another tree, the rose apple tree. He remembered a time before he was this person striving for freedom. He touched in with the pleasure of simple breath, sitting in a field. The pleasure of green grass, sky, the surrounding sounds. You can imagine yourself under the rose apple tree, your rose apple tree. This is a tree with very delicate pink flowers, much like the cherry blossoms that are blooming right now. Let's not forget that lying back is an important aspect of this practice, as is coming forward. So is beauty and wonder. So don't forget the beauty and wonder that is present where you sit. I would invite you to regularly open yourself to the beauty of this room, this altar, the fragrance of the incense, the rich soundscape, all of these beautiful breathing bodies that surround you. Despite the intensity and difficulty of Sesshin, let's not forget that the central teaching of the Dharma is well-being, sukha. There is well-being, and this is your birthright. And let's value these teachings on renunciation, these teachings that show us the problem with the extra and unnecessary things in our lives. The Dharma promises a greater and more sustainable happiness. And the Dhammapada says it this way: it is wisdom that enables letting go of a lesser happiness in pursuit of a happiness which is greater. Ironically, it's when we become homeless that a deep sense of place starts to emerge. Many people have a sense of homecoming when they enter the spiritual path. They find a refuge, a safe space, a firm shelter. For some reason, letting go of our personal concern opens life up. We become less threatened. So the point of these renunciant practices and trainings is not to become rigid and rule-bound and dry, but to be able to be more present with others, to be able to listen more deeply. As Thich Nhat Hanh so beautifully says, hear what is not being said. In this way, the Dharma is radical. It really goes against nearly everything we hear and see in society. To be, to become, to do, to acquire, to conquer, to know. No wonder the need for faith. No wonder the need for determination. And no wonder the need for friends on the path. I like to end with this inspiring statement from Zen Master Tori, from his testament, The Undying Lamp of Zen. He says, make your footsteps light and your sense of the way heavy. Don't seek fame and gain. Don't mix in worldly thoughts. Your heart will become joyful, as if you were setting out on the road back home, like you were going into a mine of gold and jade, like you have become an emperor. Keep on this way, thought to thought, and you can congeal a mass of wonder. May it be so.